Policy Committee to order. And note, we have a quorum present. Lee Johnson, have you had a chance to review the minutes for February 20th?
I have, and I will move that we accept the minutes.
All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Minutes are approved. The motion prevails. We have four bills up today, and the first bill is House File 3845, Vice Chair Egbaje's bill, a legal aid technical bill. Vice Chair Egbaje, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Egbaje, I understand you have an author's amendment.
Yes, I do.
Would you like to move and just briefly describe your amendment?
Yes. Actually, I think once I move the amendment, I can talk about the whole bill as amended.
Well,
that's fine. We can do it either way.
if you just briefly describe it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the A1 amendment looks at Section 3 and 504B.331. We are essentially changing the list of what needs to be included in a plaintiff's affidavit if they are stating that the defendant can't be found into an inclusive list rather than an optional list. So on line 2.6, we change the or to an and.
I'll just, unless there's an objection, I'll just call for a vote there on the A1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A1 is adopted, and I'll turn to Vice Chair Egbaje to present the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Today I'm presenting House File 3845, which is a technical bill to correct some drafting errors in our tenants' rights package passed last year. This bill also clarifies certain sections of existing law. As you'll see throughout the bill, in Sections 1 and 4, we correct a drafting error changing the word expiration to execution in Section 1, which clarifies the date from which the six-month time period would start on when a lease would be up for renewal. And then in Section 4, we change the appropriate cross-reference to the chapter in law. In Section 2, we make clear that the late fees in government-subsidized housing can only be charged on the portion of the rent that is the responsibility of the tenant. So this is long-settled common law, and we're codifying what actually currently takes place in the practice of law, both by landlord and tenant lawyers alike. As I talked about before, Section 3 corrects the error that clarifies the order of steps a landlord must take when serving a summons and complaint, both in situations where the defendant can and cannot be found, and then we just updated the list to make it more inclusive. And with that, I just want to thank the housing organizations who worked to further clarify this bill, including Legal Aid and Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. I ask for member support, and if there are further questions, a representative from Legal Aid is here to answer questions. Do you have any? No, just answer questions, I think. Yes.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
We have two testifiers. It looks like we have our first testifier. Please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Representative Howard. My name is Julia Zwak. I'm the managing attorney of the housing team at the Minnesota Legal Aid's Minneapolis office. I would just like to thank Representative Egbaje for presenting this bill, and we'll open for any questions.
And with that, I will open up for members. Is there any member discussion? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and maybe I'm just not very clear, but on the very first page, the landlord changing from expiration to execution. If I was to read that, the landlord must wait until 6 months from the expiration, meaning that they can't ask for a curtain lease renewal or requiring the lease renewal until at least 6 months before the expiration. But the execution of the current lease would start the day that they moved in. And it must wait until 6 months from the execution of the current lease, which means that any time 6 months after the lease, they could require a tenant to renew the lease, which seems like it's a lot more restrictive than the other. Or am I just misunderstanding that?
Looks like I'll go to Mr. Elwood or Vice Chair Egbaje.
Well, I'll take a crack at it, and then Mr. Elwood, you can clarify if I get something wrong. So my understanding with the change from expiration to execution is that if we waited until the expiration of the lease, if a landlord wasn't trying to renew early, the 6 months could actually lead until after post, like once the lease is like over. So then at that point, you kind of are moot.
That doesn't make any sense.
So it doesn't actually really help in terms of like what that six-month period actually would be when you as a landlord, would want to ask that tenant to renew. You would want to ask them to renew during the tenancy period.
Representative Petersburg?
Well, I'm still not quite sure because I know there are leases that are 18-month, that there are 2-month leases as well. So execution would requiring allowing you to require a lease to be renewed 6 months into a 2-year lease, that seems to be a little bit more difficult. So maybe I'm just misunderstanding the language, the legalese of it, shall we say?
That's fine, Mr. Chair. I'll turn to Mr. Elwood, see if maybe he can clarify further.
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair and members and Representative Petersburg, this came from the Student Legal Services last year, if you recall, and it was really, it was a typographical error, because if you read the language as it was, it would say you can't ask somebody to renew the lease until 6 months after it's over. So that makes absolutely no sense. It was purely a mistake. This says, the idea was that students were concerned because they would enter into the lease, they'd move into the apartment, and 2 days later, the landlord would say, okay, now we want you to renew your lease for next year. And so they wanted a period of time to elapse after they moved in before the landlord could say, okay, I want you to re-up for next year. And that's all this does is make that clear, that they got to wait 6 months after the student moves in, or the person, it would apply to anybody, before they can ask for the lease to be renewed. And also, I point out that in the second sentence, they can waive that and ask and do it earlier if they wanted to.
Representative Petersburg, is that?
I mean, I understand that. It seems to me it would have been easier just to say prior to the expiration of the current lease, but that's just language issues, so. Thanks.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Badgie, I sort of agree with Representative Petersburg. As a layperson, not a lawyer, and most people that read these that have to deal with them are laypersons unless they have a lawyer, the way it was worded before, 6 months before they could not be asked to extend until 6 months before the end of the lease. Now, some people are going to read this execution means they could test 6 months before the lease is executed, which means when it starts. So 6 months before you start, or is the execution 6 months after it ends? I think it just needs to be clarified a little better.
Vice Chair Badgie.
Mr. Chair, if you read it just directly, the first, 10 words, it's... A landlord must wait until 6 months from the execution, so from day one. So if the lease starts January 1 and it goes till December 31st, they have to wait until June 1 before they can ask for a renewal, which is the time period that the students were looking for to be able to settle in, understand if that's a place that they would want to live again, instead of being asked in February or March if they wanted to renew.
Lee Johnson.
I do understand that, but I think if you had the words expiration instead of execution, expiration would mean the end of the lease.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Question I had is, and maybe it was answered already, is how the 10 months came about.
Vice Chair Badgie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Myers. So the 10 months was based because this law idea came from the students, and so they're normally kind of in school for a 9 to 10 month period, and so they're usually signing shorter leases. So we were trying to accommodate kind of the leases that they see, but we also knew that because this would apply to everyone in the rental market, we also wanted to be sure that it was capturing a long enough time period for even those people who might be doing short term or longer term rentals.
Representative Myers.
Thank you.
I'm not seeing anybody else. Representative Badgie, any final words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the consideration of this bill.
And so I'm going to renew that Representative Badgie's motion that House File 3845 be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries, and this bill is on its way. Bill number 2 is House File 3810, Representative Moeller's bill. Representative Moeller, is this your first time before housing?
I think it is, Mr.
Well, welcome.
Chair. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Where are the treats?
Oh, ouch. I do have some Girl Scout cookies in my office.
Beautiful.
Anybody's welcome to come grab a cookie afterward.
Well, I'll get us going by moving that House Bill 3810 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. And Representative Moeller, I understand you have an author's amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
I'll move your A1 amendment. Would you briefly describe it?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a technical amendment. Clauses 6 and 7 that it refers to have to deal with upon motion, and the other provisions, the other clauses don't. So it's just making clear that it applies to both clauses 6 and 7.
All those in favor of the A1, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A1 is adopted. Representative Moeller, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am bringing this bill, Senate file or House file 3810. It amends current law that provides a critical right of survivor of domestic violence to break their lease when their safety is jeopardized. It makes improvements and clarifications in the law that already exists and makes it more usable for the domestic violence survivors for whom it was intended. The underlying statute was first enacted in 2007. Some changes were made in 2013, but there are some remaining gaps and obstacles for domestic violence survivors that this bill seeks to address. The current law requires a survivor who meets the qualifications to break the lease and provide notice of the date the lease will terminate. But often survivors need to flee prior to the date given in the notice. And so there's been an issue of confusion as to whether the date of termination is the date provided in the notice or the date when the survivor needed to evacuate. This bill clarifies that the termination date is the date provided in the notice. Second, advocates of domestic violence have seen cases where even though the survivor has followed the law to a T, the survivor is still named in an eviction filing. So this bill clarifies that a survivor cannot be subject to an eviction filing if they're meeting the requirements of this statute. And in working with the Multi-Housing Association, we also clarify that nothing would prevent the filing of an eviction if the survivor remains beyond the termination date. Third, this bill says that the certification that the survivor must have to prove in order to get the benefits of this law allows for them to recognize that such meetings may be virtual, because we do live in a new world now, and so that's just really modernizing the statute. And then the bill also includes a penalty for violation of the prohibition on revealing information about the survivor to the abuser or any other tenants in the lease. Obviously, the consequences of revealing such information can be very harmful to a victim of domestic violence and even deadly. Finally, I want to note that this bill is supported by Standpoint, Violence Free Minnesota, Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and Legal Aid. And I want to thank the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association for working very closely with us on crafting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I have Mr. O here. Would you like to testify? Are you available for questions? Or
Mr. Chair and members, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, just here for questions, but I'd also like to echo Representative Moeller's thanks to the Multi-Housing Association. We really work pretty hard on a lot of this technical stuff. And I also, just to recognize MHA, because this bill was first passed in 2007, and it was with their collaboration that we first got this in law. We came back in 2013 to fix some other things then. They were amenable to those changes and worked with us. And now here we are again asking for more changes to make it better and more usable for those, as Representative Moeller said, for whom it's intended. And I'd like to thank Representative Moeller for bringing it forward and for being a champion for victim survivors of domestic violence. We really appreciate your leadership in that area. Thank you.
We'll go into member questions. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moeller, question for you. You know my history. I grew up a very heavily abused kid, and one of the things that I want to make sure that we're doing is when something like this happens, what happens to the protection of the children that would go along possibly with somebody who's moving out in a shared parenting or a parent? How do we make sure that those kids don't also get caught up in this by simply revealing where my child is? I want to make sure that those children are being protected. And I didn't see that, but it's probably there. If you could maybe elucidate on that, I'd be grateful.
Representative Moeller or Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash, you know, the protection of the children in these situations is probably more in the family court arena than it is in the landlord-tenant arena. In this case, if the victim can take the children, whatever the out of the situation, it depends on what the court ordered parenting time is. And this bill and this statute does not address that at all.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll be even more direct than I usually am. I want to make sure that an abuser doesn't have access through maybe not every strength that we could put in there to the address of where their children have gone, which then also gets them a back door into the other parent. So want to be protective of the child, but also don't want this to be an on-ramp to be able to track the person that they've been abusing down. Because abusers shouldn't be able to do that.
Mr. Elwood?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nation. Thank you for clarifying what you're trying to get at. To that, I would point you to Section 3 of the bill, which makes it crystal clear that a housing provider cannot reveal any information about the notice provided, about anything. And part of the amendment on this bill is to add a penalty if that happens, to reveal the location and place either the child or the parent in danger. So,
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I'll just say too, and this is maybe outside of the scope of this bill as well, but for people who are listening and want to know, there is something called Safe at Home through the Secretary of State's office that survivors can apply for to have that extra protection too with relation to their address. But just wanted to make sure that people were aware of that.
Representative Nash?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. All that just to say, I've come to a point in my life where I'm ready to be more aggressive on abuse issues than I have ever had been. I don't want people having access to children that they have abused or their former partner that they've abused. A lot has happened in my life in the last year, and I am ready to go on the warpath to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Moeller, thank you for bringing this forward. I remember when the bill was first passed in 2007, serving some of these papers and dealing with this issue. I was in the legislature when the changes were made to make it better in 2013. We thought we had it taken care of then, but some people find loopholes and we have to adjust things. Thank you for these adjustments, they're good. It's very much needed. But I also want to thank you for bringing up the Safe at Home program, which I was too. It's a way to protect those in those situations. I actually have some constituents in my district involved in that program, and it works very well.
Representative Moeller, any final comments on the bill?
I'll just thank the members for your comments, for the ability, Mr. Chair and members, to present this to you. I will note that it passed unanimously in the other body and committee yesterday. I know we do things independently here, but hoping that I can count on your support as well. Thank you.
I hope that's where we're headed. I renew the motion that House File 3810, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say no. The motion prevails, and House File 3810 is on its way. Thank you, Representative Moeller. Up next, we have House File 2704, Representative Perez Vega. I'll note that we did hear this committee did hear this bill last year, although we didn't move it, and so we're glad to hear it again this year. Representative Perez Vega, would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 2704.
Representative Perez Vega moves that House File 2704 be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. And Representative Perez Vega, I understand you have an author's amendment.
I do have an author's amendment.
Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes.
And then briefly describe it, please.
The amendment is to insert tenants association using the right provided in this chapter, the language of that bylaws and operating agreement related to the internal governance of the tenant association. It's and to also insert, delete page 2, line 17, and insert section C, a tenant association will be completely independent of owners, management, and their representatives.
Any questions on the A3? If not, we'll vote on the A3 to get the bill in the shape you prefer. All those in favor of the A3, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A3 is adopted. Representative Perez Vega, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members of this wonderful committee. Representative Perez Vega would like to reintroduce House File 2704, Tenant Rights to Organize, which is designed to ensure tenants can organize their buildings around living conditions without fear of retaliation or displacement. This policy is designed to protect Minnesota renters from predatory landlords who intimidate and retaliate against renters for participating in tenant organizing activity. This bill allows tenants to do going door-to-door to offer information or on interest in joining a tenants association, using common space or meeting facilities to discuss living conditions, meeting without representatives or employees of the owner or management company that's present, receiving organizing assistance from non-resident tenant advocates, initiating contact with tenants via mail, phone, or electronically, and assist tenants in participating in tenant association activities. Tenants' rights to organize have been successful in Minnesota and other jurisdictions. Minnesota Statute Chapter 327C, covering manufactured home park rentals. The law protects organizing and outreach activities in manufactured home parks, supporting residents' ability to form associations and advocate collectively for improvements to their property. California, New York, the District of Columbia, and numerous cities across the country explicitly protect tenants' rights to organize. 35 states have adopted a short provision from the Uniform Residential Landlord and Tenant Act, or a comparable provision which bars landlords from retaliating against tenants for participating in a tenant union. This bill does not create an obligation for landlords to share tenant contact information, and legislation does not interfere with no solicitation provisions because it's for non-commercial purposes. The imbalance of power between landlords and tenants have a catastrophic impact on vulnerable Minnesotans who have lack of resources to fight back versus unjust lease requirements and inhabitable living conditions, and that's why I'm so passionate to present this HF 2704 today.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. We'll move to testifiers, and first we have Margaret Kaplan with the Housing Justice Center. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard, members of the committee. My name is Margaret Kaplan, and I am an attorney with the Housing Justice Center, and I'm also the president of the Housing Justice Center. We focus on the right to safe, stable, affordable housing free from discriminatory barriers. The tenant right to organize is a really important issue for us, because so often people don't have access to the rights that they should under the law, and a lot of the time it's because they don't know about them, and they don't know about the shared experience with their neighbors, or if they want to raise issues and concerns in their rental housing, they face threats of eviction, rent increases, changes of rules, lack of maintenance of their property. So I just wanted to walk really quickly through the bill. It's a pretty short bill. Really, the first section and the second section are definitions. So what do we mean by tenant association? What do we mean by tenant organizer? And in this case, a tenant association is people who have the same landlord working together to address issues related to community life, amenities, housing condition. The second section is the definition of tenant organizer. So that's a tenant or somebody who's a non-tenant assistant who's helping people organize a tenant association. so helping people access their rights and work together. And then the third section really goes into what are those activities that count as a tenant right to organize. Note that this doesn't create any obligation for the landlord to do anything in particular with regards to what tenants are organizing about. It doesn't require a landlord to distribute leaflets, provide private information, anything like that. It's just saying that they cannot interfere with tenants who are organizing together to work for the common good of the community. And finally, I want to point out section two, which is the section on retaliation. This is simply saying that if you are trying to exercise your rights under the law, you can't retaliate it against. You can't be evicted for talking to your neighbor. And one of the things that we've seen in a lack of a tenant right to organize is communities where people are receiving violation notices just for knocking on their neighbor's door. Right. And so we want to avoid that kind of activity. We want to make sure that people can assert their rights without interference. And then finally, subdivision three actually gives meaning to the law by saying that not only is this a right on paper, but there are actual penalties for violating it, which is one of the things that is a real challenge. If you have rights, but you can't assert them, they don't mean too much. One of the things that I just want to point out here, once again, is this isn't really requiring the landlord to do much different than what they already do. It is not solicitation. It does not violate people's right to quiet enjoyment. Also, it does not constitute taking under Cedar Point Nursery because tenants also have property rights, and that was a very narrow holding that specifically distinguished the Yee case, which provides tenant rights. And so we really think this is an important issue, and happy to answer any questions about it after the other testifiers.
Up next, we have Marion Butler. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. Hello. Thank you, Chair Howard, Vice Chair. I don't know how to pronounce your name. I'm so sorry. Abaje?
Yes, there you go.
Okay. Minority Lead Johnson and members of the committee. My name is Marion. I am a tenant at Ridgebrook Apartments. I have lived at Ridgebrook Apartments for 2.5 years. I'm here to speak in favor of Tenants' Right to Organize Bill, number HF2704. I would say starting of November, I've been organizing tenants against the injustice and the neglect on management part to its tenants, and recently I've been retaliated against. In the past 2 years, I've been having pest issues, maintenance issues, mold, water damage, cabinets needing to be replaced, security to my back door was not secure. I've had to reach out to the City of Brooklyn Park inspection, making complaints so that the repairs in my apartment could finally get done. After me doing that, it took a month for them to finally complete everything that needed to be repaired in my apartment, and then went on to speak at city council meetings. Addressing the issues that tenants are going through, and after doing these things, I have been retaliated against. The management at Ridgebrook Apartments have given out lease violations through pest control companies by calling my apartment unsanitary. And it is retaliation because we are being charged a $300 lease violation. I've spoken with my lawyer, and nowhere in my lease does it say anything about lease violations for unsanitary conditions, and more importantly, what fees are charged in accordance to these violations. The fee recently went up from $300 to $350, so it's very unfair that all of this is going on. We are trying to hold them accountable for the things that we've been going through, and in turn, they are retaliating and using unethical tactics. And I'm not alone. The retaliation is happening to my neighbors who have raised their voice as well. There's an ongoing pest issue that doesn't look like it's ever going to be resolved. So we're asking for this right to organize a bill to be passed. going through injustice, neglect, having to endure the things that myself as a tenant at Ridgebrook have been forced to deal with is unbearable. We pay money to live there, but we have no power at all as tenants. We're expected to stay silent regardless of our housing conditions, and that is not fair or right. It's important that the state supports tenants to have the right to organize without retaliation upon raising our voice. I hope you take me and my neighbors' concerns into consideration. I hope you ensure this bill for tenants' rights to organize is passed so that tenants across the state are able to advocate for their family without negative consequences. Thank you all in advance.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Jafar Aliweed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hello, and thank you, Chair Howard, Vice Chair Agbaje, and members of the Housing Committee. My name is Jack Farr, and I'm working with the New American Development Center. We are a nonprofit organization for immigrants and low-income members of the Somali and East African communities. As a nonprofit, and that is working with the undeserved community, we have tenants contacting us to speak on their behalf to their landlords. Some of the landlords are hostile towards us and their tenants, and they don't give us the chance to mediate between the landlords and the tenants. Some of the complaints the tenants have are the landlords are charging additional fees, low to no maintenance of their units, restricting their kids to play outside, and many more action against the tenants. Some of the tenants had stubs that weren't working, and they were forced to buy meals outside instead of cooking for their families. One of their landlords told us that they can't repair stubs because your people like to cook a lot, meaning the Somali community. We believe House File 2704 will give the tenants security and power to advocate for themselves without fear of retaliation, and we urge you to support House File 2704. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Jennifer Gordon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak this afternoon. My name is Jennifer Gordon. I've worked in the rental industry for over 25 years. I currently oversee about 12,000 units in the Twin Cities. And I'm here today on behalf of my role as current board vice chair of Minnesota Multi-Housing Association to state our concerns with House File 2704, the right to organize tenants. We agree tenants should have the right to associate with one another, to discuss their housing conditions. Residents should be allowed to address concerns related to their housing. However, this proposal goes farther than that. As written, the bill permits unrecognized individuals to gain access to a secured building for a purpose as ambiguous as community development. These individuals are not required to meet any background check requirements, which is a concern for those accessing an otherwise secured space. The permitted activities described under Subdivision 1A are concerning, as some of these activities go against the terms of the residential lease and potentially violate the privacy of other residents in the building. Line 212 would permit a tenant association or organizer to contact other residents through mail, phone, or electronically. Is the landlord required to provide this information to the tenant association or organizer under this proposal? The activities protected under Subdivision 1C may be considered disruptive by some residents, and the ability to remedy this situation is unclear. Additionally, it's important to note not all properties are built the same and not all are conducive to group gatherings. Yet Subdivision 1C does not allow landlords to prohibit protesting or group assembly, even when it jeopardizes proper ingress or egress. Lines 2.23 through 2.26 state that a housing provider cannot require someone to obtain permission to engage in activities on the property, but then the next sentence provides we can enforce limits in time, place, and manner. This language is confusing and needs to be revised for clarity as to the intentions. Also, we believe the new retaliation language is unnecessary as protections are already provided in statute. Thank you again, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for your opportunity to share concerns with this proposal. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Our last testifier is Catherine Banbury with Homeline. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Howard, members of the committee. My name is Catherine Banbury. I've been a tenant in St. Paul for decades. I'm also a tenant organizer at Homeline and a member of Equity in Place. I want to thank Representative Perez Vega for championing House File 2704. And I'm speaking personally today to why I am in support of the Right to Organize bill. Listening to my neighbors' constant despair, desperation, and anguish at trying and failing to negotiate rent increases on their own that in some cases have ended in eviction, and in many cases ended in them being economically displaced with nowhere to go, is actually what propelled my decision to become a full-time tenant organizer with Homeline. This past year, Homeline has multiculturally organized and played a role in mobilizing hundreds of fellow tenants across the city to elevate our shared experiences in our rental properties. Because of these successes, corporate management swiftly responded with increased restrictions on the freedoms and rights of renters to organize. This included clearly defined legal threats to myself. For instance, after flyering and door knocking resulted in 25 to 30 tenants regularly attending monthly meetings at my building, management cracked down, restricting promotion of the meeting to a single flyer in the corner of the mailroom. I myself was penalized with strikes on my record, communicated to me through their lawyer, threatening eviction to me and my family with even a single additional act of unsanctioned outreach. Today, most tenants in my building are afraid of retaliation because they see what is happening to me. The association meetings have significantly dwindled in size and scope. This fact is incredibly discouraging to me. The anxiety and unease that this retaliation has caused within myself cannot be underestimated. As a tenant, along with all the tenants I work with and the tenants I haven't yet met because of their fear to freely assemble and work together, we urge you to vote yes on House File 2704.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify? If not, we can go to member questions. Member questions. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm trying to remember back to when we did this last year. There, I think, was some concern from our side of the table as to the level of access that organizers might have, and were those folks being scrutinized prior to entry into the building, just as a precautionary effort to make sure that maybe there's a background check done on them or something along those lines, because I don't know what the process is and would love to know, but is there access, and maybe this is for the author, is there an effort that would be undertaken to make sure that the person who would be an organizer has been run through a background check to make sure that they're not a prohibited person or they're not a dangerous person or something along those lines? Because if this is to become law, and we want good people to be entered into a building if that's going to be the case, but we often know that some folks do things to have a surreptitious entry into another area. So just wondering if that's something that exists or maybe could exist.
Representative Perez Vega or Ms. Kaplan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. As someone that lives in a residential building and has had several conversations with folks in regards to what this would look like, I think about every time I let a guest inside of my place, and they don't need a background check to be allowed into that building. and if anything was to occur where me not knowing their background check happened, I would be held accountable by the premises of the building as to allowing someone in there. I would like to ask you to answer and respond if you have any additional, but as far as a background check on anyone that is invited to participate, whether it is to discuss the what we've heard from our testimonial today and from pest control all the way to maybe a makeup party in your party room, I would have to say that's quite a bit insulting to say we need a background check on someone who is going to be of an advocacy of a concern or of a supporter for consumers.
Ms. Kaplan?
I think that, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, for the question. I think it's a really important one. A couple of things that I think are important to note. The first is, as Representative Perez-Vega noted, people have a right to have guests, and those guests don't need background checks. And so that seems like it could be a little bit of a little bit overly intrusive then. The second thing I would note is that organizations that do tenant organizing, we are really careful about employing people and making sure we do background checks on them as well, too. If somebody is on the premises for bad purposes, then the landlord has every right to remove them from the property if they are engaged in something illegal. And we see that happen occasionally in all kinds of properties, right, where somebody engages in illegal activity, and that becomes a real management concern, and management sort of being on top of those issues and making sure they're addressing people's right to quiet and enjoyment of their properties, a really important consideration. Another thing I would note, though, just in terms of people feeling safe in their properties, is you feel safer when you know your neighbors. Right, creating community and creating space with other people in your building kind of allows you to understand who's there and who isn't and who's supposed to be there and who isn't, and it feels safer in a way that I think people operating in isolation rarely feel.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. When you look to hire someone who might be an organizer, you do a background check on them? Is that a legal requirement, or is that a procedure that you at your organization do on your own?
Ms. Kaplan.
Thank you, Chair Howard, Representative Nash. That's just a best practice in employment law. There's no specific legal requirement for that, just as there's no specific legal requirement for background checks by property owners or landlords for the person who's going to come in and fix the toilet, right? This is, to a certain extent, I think we have to make sure that we're really thinking about access as something that is, and the ability to offer access to a property is something that is owned by the tenant who has property rights in that property. And so if they're granting somebody permission to come in, do some tenant organizing, having that higher barrier just seems like it's a little bit of an overstretch.
Yeah. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe if you wanted to come by my office, I have more questions, and I don't want to belabor this, and I'm not
sure.
I'm not trying to castigate anybody. I'm just trying to say if a person is to have access to the building, and I think I remember asking last year, the folks that may be coming in to organize aren't always known personally by the person that is inviting them. Mm-hmm. So that extra layer of potential scrutiny might actually be a good thing in the grander picture of things. So I would love to talk more about that.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and Rep for bringing this bill forward. I spent most of the entire summer and into the fall actually reviving our Duluth Tenant Housing Union. And I think as we've heard in this committee, that so long as we have a commodified housing market, the number I think was 95% of Minnesota housing stock is privatized. And I think we've made some really great efforts to move towards, cooperatives, to guaranteed housing for all. I personally, going to just be honest. I would love to see us continue to decommodify, move to social housing. But until that point, I think as long as we're calling somebody a lord, says we got a long way to go. I don't know. That feels like it for me. But I just wanted to chime in that, you know, we have a lot of renters in my community. It's over half of us, and a lot of those are Black, Brown, Indigenous, poor folks, caregivers, single parents, folks with disabilities, and we knocked thousands of doors in my community. And what we did was we actually started meeting, and we had about 30 people to come. You eat a meal together. You talk about, here's your rights. You talk about, here's my story. The rent is too damn high, right? You're sharing community and collective power and knowledge and equipping people. And sometimes there's language barriers. And so people don't always understand, or they're disenfranchised, or we've got lack of trust in the government. And all of these different barriers, you know, I heard stories from college students to elders who told me things like there was unexpected fees, $25, $50, when they went to go do the application to reapply for their house. And they said, well, I'm not going anywhere. Why would I have to pay that fee? To things like rodents. And we've taken those measures with the tenant protections bills last year. But we know that there's still that imbalance of power. And so I just wanted to chime in and say that I think it's a really beautiful thing that we have people from all across our communities who want to be a part of our housing crisis and solutions, and that the people closest to the problem should be closest to the solution. And, you know, the other thing I want to just make sure that in this bill, under residential tenant, does that include like mobile home parks, for-profit and nonprofit, right? It's any renter.
Representative Perez Vega.
I love music, by the way.
So sorry about that.
But fortunately, we don't have a soundtrack in here. thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you, as far as the mobile homes?
Yeah, it includes any residential.
Correct. Okay. And as I stated when I introduced the 2704, is that the Minnesota Statute Chapter 327 covers manufacturing on home parks, and mobile homes are part of that.
Okay.
Representative Kozlowski?
Well, yeah, and then one more question. So in terms of, you know, living in a community where everybody knows everybody in Greater Minnesota, I swear. And so to the retaliation piece, I really appreciate that we spent a lot of time on that, because that's something that we think about a lot, and that hasn't come to fruition yet where I'm at. But as we've heard, it has in other parts of the states when people come together and start organizing in this way. And so I'm just curious if you could walk us through or help us better understand what that process would be like. If there were retaliation, would that go through the courts, or is there organizations that could help a tenant in the event that they are retaliated against? Because what I was thinking is that this could be, you know, a potential on-ramp for us into the foster care system and those things that we see with CPS or with law enforcement. And so making sure that, because we're fighting for our rights and we're fighting to make sure that we can afford our lives, that doesn't fall back on us. But we know that our communities face a lot of barriers, that when it does, it can be hard to take action. So anything that you'd have about that process would be greatly appreciated.
Excellent. Representative Perez Vega or Ms. Kaplan?
Let you respond on that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Kozlowski. So in terms of the process, you know, it does a couple of things. I mean, one is, if you have a right and you know about it, right? If you've experienced retaliation and you know about it, it really empowers people then to be able to bring that to the attention of their landlord, right? Like, you cannot do this because I have these rights and I did these things and this is protected activity and what you're doing is retaliation. And a lot of the time, especially if it's not done in bad faith, folks are like, oh, I didn't know that, right? And they'll back down, yeah. Hopefully. Right, assuming best intentions, but if somebody really wants to retaliate against somebody, what this does is it really opens the door for a private cause of action. It kind of semi already exists, but it says, like, in this instance, not only do you have a certain set of rights, but you can go to court, you can get a statutory relief for each occurrence of retaliation, and it will pay for reasonable attorney's fees. This doesn't take away the necessity in fighting these battles for people to have to work with attorneys. Unfortunately, our court system isn't designed very well for people to advocate for themselves. But it does certainly create a lot more certainty about what people's rights are and really creates a standard for what you need to do and what you need to prove and creates a lot more clarity than we've seen in the past.
Representative Kozlowski.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for bringing forward this bill, and it's really going to set us on a good footing in that floor that you're talking about. So thank you.
Representative Dotseth.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Representative, I don't want this to be taken wrong. I think I understand the heart behind this bill and your intent behind it. But I just want to ask, not all organizers are the same as well. I think you'd have to testify just like all landlords may not be the same as well as all organizers. And I think there's just a lot of things that can be modified and adjusted in this bill that would help enhance this. I guess I've got some concerns. If I've got a 85-year-old grandmother living in a facility and she's volatile and respects her privacy, and you get a knock on the door from a organizer, I just look at what could potentially go wrong at that type of situation, or a single mother with two children and someone knocking on the door, a stranger knocks on the door. I mean, it just really opens up a lot of volatility for a lot of different groups of people. And I think that's what we got to look at, the property rights of all people. And that's what we have to address. I think this needs to be fine-tuned a lot better before we get to the point that we want to get to. But I understand the heart behind it. Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess I'm going to just piggyback a little bit on what Representative Nash said, and the reason why I have some concern just for consideration. It's one thing to have organizers within the same community, the same building there, because most people will at least know something of them and they can get that information of it. But unfortunately, we also have a society in which there are a lot of bad actors that are preying in on vulnerable people. And so when a bad actor who comes in to a situation where there's a lot of vulnerable people and promotes that they are going to organize and get people involved with that, and then decides to say, we need this much in order to be able to do the work or whatever it might be, and people fund that, and then they get taken for those dollars, I'm wondering, would they not have some sort of claim back to the landlord because they allowed that person in to actually involve them? So the question about whether or not organizers are there for a good purpose is real as to what the need is for. How that comes about, I'm not sure. And a background check isn't the correct way when the organizer's coming from outside the community, but it should give us some sort of pause to say, we don't want people to be victimized because the benefit of organizing is certainly there, but there's also some, I'm hearing all the time of people that are taken from fraud, from online, people that are talking about money that they invested and so forth. And so there's some concern there. What level of importance I think is still needs to be addressed, but that's a concern that we have, and that's for whatever it's worth. Thank you.
Vice Chair Igbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is probably better suited toward Ms. Kaplan, and it's probably going to be a series of questions. But in most leases and property managers, they usually allow tenants to have guests, correct? And then they usually also allow, oftentimes, commercial sellers, especially people doing cable promotions. The restaurant next door is doing a promotion. There might be people who are distributing coupons within buildings. That happens. Is that correct?
Ms. Kaplan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Abaje. Yeah, it can. I mean, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they prohibit that, sometimes they don't. But they make choices about it, and so it's a little can happen.
Right. And Mr. Chair, my other question, too, is most residential properties also have rules related to when cleaners come in and repair people and delivery people. And that usually is you know, to going back to one of the testifiers noted the language in 2.24, that usually is sometimes done with permission and then also structured in the time and place and manner in which your delivery person can come in. Is that correct?
Ms. Kaplan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abadja, yes, that's correct.
Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, so yes, and so, and then the last group too that often comes in into apartment buildings, which many of us know are politicians who come in and try to organize to get people to come out to events like precinct caucuses. So, so I'm thinking that if someone is a tenant organizer and they come from an organization that hopefully has hired them and done their best practices regarding employment law, that if a tenant invites that organizer, they would then also fall under the same rules that govern guests, visitors, repair people. And if something bad were to happen, which we don't want, but if something bad were to happen, the landlord has a remedy that they can pursue against the tenant and or that organizer themselves. Is that correct?
Ms. Kaplan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Abadja. Yes, so they would not be different than other guests. There wouldn't be any particular onus placed on the landlord. It would be if somebody is engaging in illegal or inappropriate activity or they're trying to commit fraud, those are things that they would be, like, that person committing those acts would be responsible for.
Okay. Vice Chair Abadja.
Mr. Chair, so I think finally I'll just note that we have structures in place in our landlord-tenant law and our leases that already try to prevent bad actors from coming into apartment buildings. And I think also, too, from an organizing perspective, I think as you noted earlier, if someone does not want to participate in the organizing, they have the right to say no, the same way that they say no to many of us when they don't want to talk to us when we're trying to entice them. And so I think, you know, this is an opportunity for residents in the building to be able to see if there is an appetite to form a tenants association. If there is not, then I think those tenants would push back and say, you know what, this is not something that we want. We don't want you coming around and asking us about this anymore. And if you do, we would take the appropriate action. And so I see this bill as a way for tenants to have a voice, whether they want to organize and work together to enhance their living situation. But if they're fine with their current living situation or they don't feel the need or they may be too scared to update it, they don't have to. And I'm not sure wanting enhanced security measures for a non-resident when we have, I've listed about 10 types of non-residents who come into our buildings every day. And as a renter, I can tell you I see a ton of people that probably should not be in my building. But, you know, I think if I was really worried, I would be able to go to my landlord and say, you know, you might want to check out this person. So thank you for bringing this bill forward. And I appreciate talking about this issue because I do think it's important so people can know what the safety concerns are.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Perez Vega and Ms. Kaplan for testifying. I'm just looking for a little bit of clarification. Lines 2.4 and 2.5 talk about issues related to living environment, which then discusses terms and conditions of their tenancy and also activities related to housing and development. Just looking for a clarification or examples. You know, I can see you know, the living environment or living conditions, but when you start talking about terms and conditions, a lot of times that's disclosed early on. And so I'm just wondering from this language, what does this cover and what does it not cover?
Representative Perez Vega or Ms. Kaplan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So this is pretty expansive in the sense of people can organize around any issue related to their tenancy that they feel like they want to organize around. Once again, it doesn't obligate the landlord to respond in any particular way. Like if it's a violation of laws or specific rights, they should remedy those. But for example, people have organized in buildings because everybody in the building received a very large rent increase, right? And so they came together, they had discussions about it, and they made proposals to the landlord saying, hey, this rent increase is something we can't actually afford. And so it's just protecting their rights to work together to say that. It's not saying that the landlord has to respond in any particular way about that, right? Also, rule changes is another one. Sometimes the rules in a lease will change because, you know, you have your lease, then your lease will come up for renewal, and maybe they'll make some changes to it. That's another instance where people are organizing around the terms of the tenancy, where they're like, you know what, to us, you might not be understanding, but this doesn't seem fair, or it's taking away a right that's really important to us, and so we just want to be able to tell you that and engage in discussion about that, and that our right to have a conversation with each other is protected. We can do that, and we can't be retaliated against for working together.
Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, I think what you just said to me was, you know, you can get together for any reason. If everybody's got the same rent, it doesn't change, then, you know, they could get together as a group and have no limitation on putting pressure on a landlord of any sort. I'm just trying to look to see if there was any limitations, because to me, the living environment, the terms and conditions, I mean, some of this stuff is predetermined from a lease. So I think that was clarifying for me.
Representative Cha.
Ms. Kaplan, question for you. Is there a background check requirement for, like, contractors and maintenance people who come to rental properties to do repairs?
Ms. Kaplan.
Thank you, Representative Howard, Representative Hussein, or Cha, sorry. I'm, like, looking at the name in front of me. I know who you are, Representative Cha. No, there is not a background check for people to come in and do repairs on the property.
Representative Shaw?
Yeah, the reason why I bring up this issue because I'm a father of three daughters, right? I've been a renter before. And not all landlords are the same, right? Some landlord hire contractors that, you know, may be questionable. But that's just one of my concerns when we talk about, you know, access to my rental property or so forth, that when someone like myself has a father and having someone in my home, doesn't make me feel comfortable if they also don't have background checks, right, on contractors who are coming to the property. So that's my concern. Thank you.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Perez Vega. Quick question for you. If a organizer is allowed in, no background checks, and they do something, who's liable?
Ms. Kaplan.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Thank you, Representative Johnson. So somebody who comes onto the property and does something wrong or illegal, they are responsible for their own acts. If they are a guest of somebody, then the tenant is also responsible for their own guests.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard. I have concerns with the liability issue on this. I'm going to take an example from a incident that happened to a very close relative of my wife. She was actually killed in an apartment building by a person that was living there. Not on the lease. Management didn't know they were there. Very extensive criminal history, violent history. Was given a key and access to the building by the renter. It was the management company that was held liable. Not the person who let them live there. It was the management company and the owners of the building. This opens up huge liability to the property management and the owners of the building. should something happen. I hope it never does. Now, you talked about the person to come to fix the toilet. They're hired by the management company, but guess what? The owner of that company is liable for the actions of that person. The organizer isn't hired by a company. So it'll turn around with the deep pocket. It's going to be the management company that's going to be sued should something happen. But this bill gives them no rights to do any checks on the person, any background, history. Anybody could come in and say they're going to organize, and they'd have to be let in. There needs to be some checks and balances. I understand why you want to do something like this with the issues that Marion had. And Marion, I hope you, if the city councils and the city officials aren't doing anything, go to the county prosecutor or the city prosecutor, because what that landlord has done is either a gross misdemeanor or a misdemeanor in the 504 statutes already. And if they refuse to do something, ask them why they're refusing to enforce the laws, because the retaliation is already against the law. So I got a I do have a few problems with this for the liability issues and the safety of the tenants in that building. And with that, I'm going to request a roll call.
Representative Lee Johnson requests a roll call on the bill. Any other comments? Otherwise, I'll go to Representative Perez Vega for a response or any final comments on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I want to address as a renter, I actually had something happen to me about 2 weeks ago in my property where someone stole my bicycle. They walked in through the surveillance. We filed a police report with our management, who was great, helpful, to make sure that it wasn't a guest of a resident. Surveillance came, or officers from the SPPD came, filed the report, were able to catch the folks that did it just based off of the surveillance, and that person was not a guest of anyone. And it was just a matter of law. Somebody did something bad, and the law took care of it, right? I didn't get my bag back, but I'm glad that everyone's safe, and it's unfortunate what happened, Representative Johnson, to your friend. However, when I think about Marion and I think about the testifiers who came here today, who may not have known about the accessibility of those rights, when we seek the folks that have been advocating for this law, the systemic injustices of even civic engagement, to understand that what may be basic for someone isn't for a lot, in particular as to why we are presenting this 2704. It's important to recognize that there's bad things happening in certain places all the time. But if you don't communicate and know your neighbors, how are you even to address that? This is an opportunity to communicate to keep things safe around residential properties. And I also like to thank Vice Chair Abaje for your statements, especially as we're getting ready into a couple days away from caucusing. And me having a district that has a lot of apartments, that we know our rights, that as someone running in for office, that we have to have a resident with us the entire time as we knock through those doors. You have to have a resident this entire time that you'd like to organize. That's why we're here to present this, is to say we want to make sure that there's safety for the residents, that there's safety for the property, and that there's safety for the management. It's clear that this isn't about allowing protests. I didn't see that language in here either. That was made, that was not in that section. It's clear that it's about making sure that everyone who's underneath a roof of duplex or more has the ability to congregate, to celebrate, to recognize the pits and the peaks of what's happening, and to maybe even get civically engaged in opportunities that have never been a part of their culture, their community, expectations. And I look at this as democracy here. I look at this as a value for our residents in the state of Minnesota to be participating in avenues to keep our communities safe. Thank you.
With that, Ms. Erdahl will take the roll. Sure. Oh, excuse me, sorry. I wanted to clarify that what we're voting on, Representative Perez Vega is renewing the motion that House File 2704, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Now we can move on to the roll.
Chair Howard.
Chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Agbaje.
Aye.
Lee Johnson.
No.
Representative Cha.
Aye.
Representative Dotsas.
No.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Kozlowski.
Aye.
Representative Myers.
Nay.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Norris.
Aye.
Representative Perez Vega.
Aye.
Representative Petersburg.
No.
With a vote of 7-5, the motion prevails, and House File 2704 is on its way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, no applause, please. No applause. Next, we have House File 3917, Representative Hassan's bill.
I promise this is going to be an easy bill.
Let's go for it then, huh?
All right,
Representative Hassan. You all, will you move your bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hassan moves that House File 3917 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Policy Committee. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present House File 3917, which is an act relating to housing, clarifying the tenant rights to contact emergency services and amending Minnesota Statute 504B-205, Sections 2, 3, and 6. Most people understand that 911 is an emergency number that you call when you have emergency services. But imagine if you are being evicted and become homeless because you called 911 too many times. According to research, more than half of people with mental illness don't receive help with their disorders and often avoid seeking services and diagnoses because they're afraid of the prejudice and the stigma that's related and the discrimination that follows once someone finds out that you have mental illness. Minnesota Statute 504B-205 protects tenants from being affected for calling police or emergency assistance. But this doesn't include health crisis or mental health services. I don't know if anyone is aware, in last year, November, U.S. Department of Justice revealed that its investigation that the city of Anoka had been providing information to landlords about people who have mental illness crisis who have called 911 too many times, and they urge landlords to evict them. This bill makes it clear that people calling for help during a mental health crisis do not and cannot be affected or penalized in any way. I want to thank NAMI Minnesota and the Legal Service Advocacy Project for bringing this issue to our attention. For bringing our attention to this issue. With that, Chair Howard, I have a testifier, and then we'll stand for questions.
Thank you. We have Sue Abderholen with NAMI Minnesota. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member Sue Abderholen, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness. I want you to imagine that you have a child with a serious mental illness. They are in crisis and you call 911. The police come to your apartment and are helpful. Then over the next few months, your child is in crisis several times and you call 911 again. And then one day you open your mail and you see you are being asked to leave your apartment because there have been too many 911 calls. And this is just one of the several scenarios that NAMI has received over the last couple of years. but honestly, it really was the city of Anoka's actions, which the Department of Justice found violated several federal laws that instigated this bill. The city police department actually would go out to 911 calls for mental health crisis, including suicide. They would gather the information about the diagnosis and any medications, and then they actually sent the information, including their names and diagnosis and any medications, to landlords in the city and encouraged them to actually evict them. Now, again, no one ever, ever should feel reluctant to call 911 in a mental health or health crisis, and no one experiencing those crises, right, should be treated in this way. And so the bill really simply clarifies that the current law, under the current law, you can't penalize someone for calling 911 for a health or mental health emergency. We thought actually under the current statute that any other contact included health and mental health, but clearly it doesn't. And so we really just want to clarify this. Again, I really urge your support for this bill. We already have enough people with mental illnesses who are homeless. We don't need to make any more. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions? Representative Nash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for doing this bill. That's a ridiculous notion that that would be done by the police. That's like saying somebody who has diabetes that has an emergency call coming to the house would be evicted for having diabetes or other things. I'm disappointed that that's where we found ourselves. So. Representative Hassan, thanks for doing this.
Representative Hassan, any final comments on the bill?
Like I said, it was an easy bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I urge for your support.
Easy but important. I'll renew Representative Hassan's motion that House File 3917 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, and House File 3917 is on its way. Members, that wraps us up for today. We do not have a committee hearing on Tuesday, the 27th, so we'll see you a week from today on Wednesday, the 28th. With that, we're adjourned.